It was intended for the human to support the machine to support the human at work.
And AI means something different to anybody you talk to, which is wild.
This is AI or Die.
Welcome back to AI or Die, episode, what is it, guys, 13 at this point?
Nice.
Kind of
good
a
job, Nick.
Yeah, pinch me moment. We've been doing this for a year now, basically. We've been cranking these out one a month. I can't wait till we're on episode 113. What would that be, 10 years from now? We'll just keep it going. But how are you, as always? Let's go through on the top. How are we personally? What are we working on? What's exciting us lately? And then we'll get into news and trends, some of the latest articles that we've seen come out since our last podcast episode. And then later, in about 30 minutes or so, we're going to have our guest, Alex Rogoshian, join. He's a director of data science and artificial intelligence at Bread Financial in this area, too. So with that, Reagan, Brendan, how are you guys doing?
Good. Doing great. Yeah. Trying to stay caffeinated. We just had an event last night with our partner, Birchworks. Shout out to Birchworks. And it was super fun. And then we went to dinner afterwards. So I'm dragging a little bit today.
Yeah. Bit of a late night. How are you feeling today, Brendan? How'd you sleep last night?
I slept like a rock. I'm doing good. Been running more. So I've been sleeping better. It's funny how that works. If you just run, you sleep well. But I went to the beach this morning before work because I worked the flip schedule here from Barcelona.
Rub it in.
It's beach weather. It was sunny. I probably have a sunburn. So just to rub it in a little bit, you know.
Yeah, we're in Columbus with 50 degrees. It is blue skies today, so it does look warmer than it actually is. But if you get out there, it's still pretty brisk. It's not quite warm that you're feeling.
Banning weather chat.
No weather chat. Oh, yes. That's a very good call. Very good call. I don't know if we talked about this on the pod or not, but Brendan gives us a lot of flack when we talk about weather because I agree. I get it. On the surface, it's very bland. Like, it's a comfort zone for a lot of folks to just talk about the weather and what's going on.
I've decided to amend my statement about all weather talk, and I'm going to focus it in where like you can talk about the changing of the seasons. Like that's okay.
Okay.
Like, it has to be like details about the changing of the seasons. And that's like, okay. Like, oh, it's so nice that it's summer now. Or, oh, it's like good that it's X, Y, Z. But it just can't be like crazy weather we're having. Huh? Like it's got to be like, oh, spring is finally here. Summer is finally here. Like that has to be in that vein and that's kosher. But then, yes, it can't be like, oh, wow, rainy again today.
Well, in a similar vein, I think conversations of, wow, can't believe it's end of March already. Can't believe it's this date in the year already, too. I feel like that's a very similar vein that we're
probably
very guilty
offending in. So many weather fans out there right now. Listen, it's my go-to. It's my comfort blanket. I can't help it.
You have to kill the small talk to force people into the medium and deeper talk. That's the point, right? You got to push them.
So you had a backup to that. What was your alternative going to be?
I was doing the joke ones where like, what's your relationship with your parents like? What were you like as a child? What was your childhood like?
You
jump to therapy questions. You just got to skip over the...
You had a really specific one that you were going to use as an alternative. Something about a superhero or...
Oh, I used to do like the, would you rather be a dolphin or an octopus? Because it's a good like personality classification to me.
Yeah. So let's do more of that. Everybody, listeners out there, try and cut the weather talk. Try and cut the calendar talk. Like,
let's get deeper.
Let's get into some deep stuff with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Love it.
What else is going on? Yeah. So with me, what is going on? Gosh. So for folks who know, Aligni has a product. We call it the Aligni Hub. We have a lot of customers on there now, and it's exciting, kind of working with the features and really understanding their usage patterns too. So very busy times, just on the customer success and customer experience side around just working with customers, understanding their pains. Like, and it's very exciting just to see how they're using our product already. So yeah, quarter one's been huge for us. It's very exciting times professionally. Personally, got a lot of trips coming up. I know, didn't intend to have this much travel, but basically are going to Napa for something in a couple months, going to Austin for a thing in a couple months too, going to a few other places this year. So summer's flashing out to be pretty busy. For a thing. I don't know.
Going to Austin for a thing.
Just for a thing. I don't know if we want to talk about that. I don't know. Yeah, it's
could be a wedding, maybe.
Could be. I don't know. Yeah. So it's teeing up to be a big travel year. I know, Brendan, I need to come out and see you too, at least before the end of this year. That's another kind of New Year's resolution I have, is come out and visit you. We should do something together, especially like, come on, how often do you know somebody and work with somebody every day who lives in such a cool place like Barcelona too? So yeah, something like that. I got to make it happen.
Come over and eat some paella, also known as paella, you know,
paella.
Paella. Some high quality paella they got here. So
good times.
Yeah. What's up with you guys? Anything new? Anything other stuff personally, professionally, that's top of mind?
No, just heads down. It's work. I mean, it work has been crazy. I mean, it's just absolutely nuts this quarter. So I have been traveling less. I feel like when we did these podcasts last year, it was like, oh, I was at this conference and I was in Boston and I was in San Francisco. And I want to get back to that. I want to get back out there because it's really healthy to understand what's happening in the different ecosystems and hear what people are working on because the space just moves so fast. Yeah. But I've been doing less of that just because we need to be heads down with our customers and we have a lot to get done. But I'm hoping to get back out there. So I'm going to start picking things back up and getting the travel plans going again. I was in Scottsdale not too long ago speaking to a group of CIOs, which was awesome. And so just kind of talking to them about what their strategy is for this and how they're thinking about it and what phases they're at. So that's always really great to hear. It's just kind of boots on the ground. What is actually happening?
So many more people now are doing AI, and we're going to talk about that with our guests later, but it's just such an everyday thing now that every single organization is working on some form of another. So yeah, very exciting times.
Yeah, so with great. That, oh, sorry. I was going to say, we've been working on some of our functionality around generative AI and getting deeper and deeper into what's now possible, especially with these LLMs and more kind of like conversational AI. So that's been really exciting just to push not only on the engineering side, but also on the design side and understanding more of that interaction between like the user's experience and what the model's doing. So that's just been a lot of fun to see now what's capable or possible and really how using those LLMs solves a lot of the hard problems of AI. So you can really focus on that user experience, really focus on making it very valuable and very useful. So it's really interesting to be able to work with that to solve some new and interesting problems.
And with everyone using AI, just to flip into some trends and some articles that we've seen come out recently too, there's a lot of use and there's a lot of misuse of AI. I think one of the things that has really been a popular article I keep seeing coming up is Microsoft just acquiring more and more companies. So getting top talent, like pulling a lot of, you know, existing folks from where they're at just to become this big kind of monolithic kind of AI centerpiece too. Definitely see this trend continuing of just Microsoft continuing to buy and buy and be that basically one place for enterprises to engage with AI, starting with Copilot, but I'm sure there's a lot more functionalities coming out too with each company they acquire.
Yeah, obviously big news with Inflection, you know, them spending a $650 million licensing deal with Inflection and then taking both of the co-founders internally, basically an acqui-hire that happened. Because I think they had originally invested like over $1 billion in the company. And then what they did with that licensing deal, I believe, is give money back to the original investors as well, because they were co-investing with some other folks. I think Greylock was one of them. But yeah, that's a huge debate right now. There's a lot of discussion around them trying to avoid any potential issues because the acquisition ecosystem right now is really heavy because people are trying to, I guess, regulate for monopolies in the space. And so instead of outright buying Inflection, they just gave them a massive license deal and took their, you know, two co-founders and a bunch of their engineers along with them. So that was a really interesting move.
Well, I know there's another article you shared, Brendan, around SEC putting out this release, charging basically two investment advisors for making false misleading claims around their use of artificial intelligence. So thinking about the other side, more of the teams using it basically as marketing to basically say, hey, we use artificial intelligence to help with investments to build up, I don't know, faith in the company that they're the most cutting edge, you know, group to invest with too. I think it's interesting because like one side with the OpenAI and Sora side is what data are you using to basically train the model? And the other side is, you know, are you just saying you're using AI and you're not even using it to train a model and actually get, you know, actual results from it too? Was that a quick guest spot from your cat, by the way?
That was a person walking down the street making a howling noise. So the sights and sounds of Barcelona street
we're
life.
We're keeping that
to
in.
You,
sorry,
coming to
we're
you
keeping
live.
That in.
We're definitely
good.
Keeping
that was a good yowl. I mean, that was really, I mean, it sounded pretty close. I wonder if it's like a skill of his or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that was Alfredo. I was like, oh, that's got to be your actual dog.
Not my dog, not Alfredo. He is fast asleep right now. Yeah, I thought
that's
it was your
That's hilarious. Cat. Yeah. Yeah. So the SEC thing was really interesting. Go ahead, B.
As I said, it's the first time the SEC has made me laugh because I was like, oh, wow, this is like a really funny thing to get slapped on the wrist for. But I think it's going to happen more and more because they coined the term like, or maybe it's been coined elsewhere, but AI washing, like we're pretending to do this, even though we're not doing it, like greenwashing and a couple other the washing phrases. So I thought that was really funny. And it also gets into an interesting question of like, what is artificial intelligence? Because like, what would define, I guess if you're lying and saying it's machine learning, that would be, you know, worthwhile. But yeah, if it's an expert system, you can make an argument that like a really crazy Excel formula would count as like an expert system. So I think it's an interesting piece to figure out is like, how much can you say that you're really doing it? I think they did call it machine learning specifically from AI, by the way. So that would make it a little bit more intense. But I think a lot of companies might get their wrist slapped like this because a lot of people are probably hyping up what they're actually doing underneath like the covers of that functionality.
Yeah. Are a lot of teams quickly updating their website now with that coming out? So it's just using the more general AI term instead of like, we're using ML or LLMs. Yeah.
I haven't seen a startup pitch deck without the letters AI in it in a while. So I think that might be the new wave in the AI scene or the startup scene at least.
And is greenwashing when they're talking about we're sustainable, like we're eco-friendly as a company? Yeah. Okay. So now it's AI washing where it's like, hey, we're forward thinking. We're innovative. We use AI in this. Yeah.
Exactly. Just pretending.
And I think obviously there's a lot of incentive to do that. There was the stat that came out that the performance of certain companies, you know, publicly traded stock did better if they mentioned AI in their kind of quarterly, you know, quarterly meeting. And I think that's really interesting. Like, okay, if you just mention AI, people, you know, the market's like, oh, great. Like you must be doing something interesting or something useful. And, you know, people like us who are in it all day, every day, we know that that is not the case. And in fact, lots of companies are still struggling to see ROI from pretty much anything that they're doing.
Yeah. With that, I mean, there's the other side of the coin too of, okay, we're just seeing this at a high level, just being in the field of just so many people throwing money at AI and the promise of AI being transformational. And I think already just in Q1, we're starting to see some realization or sobering of like, hey, we implemented this AI tool and it's just not showing the kind of value that either we were promised or that we expected when that was coming in too. So I think it's a lot more scrutiny coming up with vendors who are, say they're using AI just by the customers of like, well, help me learn more about like how exactly you're using AI. What are the actual operational changes that we're going to realize from that too? And I think it's already starting to happen, at least from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I heard this in San Francisco about a month and a half ago. We're in the AI hangover phase. We're starting to enter into the hangover phase.
There you go.
It'll be interesting to see how the next year or two goes.
I mean, the potential is certainly still there. So I think of it, and maybe this is me being optimistic, I don't think of it as a bubble because it's not like there isn't novel, interesting changes to how operations work at a company underneath of here. So I think there's still the opportunity. It's just the shotgun blast. It's like everyone's gone very wide around just throw AI at the problem. I think it's just going to get more narrow around like, okay, let's really prioritize our focus, our energy, our budget, our people around like these more pointed kind of solutions operationally and work backwards to it being an AI solution as opposed to just AI hammer looking for a nail somewhere throughout the operations for sure.
Yeah, I think we're starting to move from, again, art of the possible into like what's real. And I get this question a lot, like, is it overhyped? Is it real? What is real? Like, we get those questions quite a bit in terms of fielding, like, how do I think about this? And I'm like, yes, of course it's real. Like, it's real. Not like things are, now some stuff is falsified. And when you see a demo, they've literally looked through a ton of different use cases on their technology and they found the best performing one and they absolutely optimized the storyline around that demo. And so it almost gives this perception that every single use case should have that kind of performance. And that's just not the case. They're cherry picking the ones that work really well. And in some cases they're even falsifying that, which starts to create a lot of, you know, pessimistic views on the entire ecosystem. And so I think it's really easy to get caught up in saying, oh, it's a hype. You know, there's a lot of BS out there, and that's true, but two things can be true at the same time. And yes, there's a lot of hype and there's a lot of falsified claims, but there's a lot of realness that, you know, we have witnessed, you know, not even just in the last couple of years, we've been in the space for a long time. So we've witnessed it past this as well.
Yeah, and just to clarify too, I think it could be a bubble and it could burst. Like there was a dot-com crash, right? There was a dot-com bubble, but I'm using a web browser right now and I've been using ChatGPT almost every day for like the last at least 6 months solidly, if not for the last year. So I think it's definitely real. And I think the piece I'm starting to learn and see is just there's so much technology built into these endpoints that are available through like Microsoft or open source models. And I think the closest parallel is like the open source movement that happened around computing and like our ability to leverage a lot of open source. But there's just so much ability to solve problems like packed into that endpoint. And it's so accessible. I think that is like the piece that I'm really wowed by is like, if we can figure out how to feed it the right data and the right prompts and we can align it to the right problems, there's so much possibility to solve new problems. So that's where I think there'll be a lot of staying power. Even if there is a temporary bubble burst, I think there will be a long-term growth around all of this, just with how much it can actually solve problems.
Do you guys think that fear has been reduced among the average person that the AI is going to take their job?
No.
I think it's a split. I think some people have played around with things like Microsoft Copilot. It was like, oh, this thing's supposed to take my job? Yeah, right. You know, like some people have been like minimally exposed because you got to think like of all the people out there that have jobs, how many of them are exposed to AI at all? How many of them have touched it, used it? And how many of them are deeper into it? And so I think the people that are deeper into it might be a little bit scared just because they understand, the power that it can provide. And we'll talk about maybe Devin here in a second, the software engineer, right? Like that was pretty powerful. And so if you're deep enough in it, you're like, oh, wow. If you've touched just something like Microsoft Copilot, and sorry, I don't mean to dig on them, but like there's a lot of workflows that don't work with that tool. And so if you've just touched that, you're for you to try to extrapolate that across all of AI, you'd be like, yeah, I'm not concerned at all. This is not impressive. And then on the other side of that, if you've not touched it and you don't know much about it, you're kind of afraid of the unknown. So your brain just kind of fills in the gaps and assumes that it can do things it can't do. And I think, so there's like probably a subset of people who are not concerned, but there's a lot of people that are. What is that called? The Dunning-Kruger effect or whatever, right?
Yeah, I was going to say one data point is I went to a comedy show over the weekend and they asked me what I did for work, like the comedian on stage.
Oh,
and I said, I worked in AI. And he was immediately like, oh, so you're the guy trying to take all of our jobs. Like that was like his immediate reaction. Like, I think that's like the default, like, oh, you guys are trying to take jobs away. So I think there's definitely that fear, at least in a lot of folks.
Yeah. Get some laughter.
Yeah.
Awkward chuckles, nice awkward chuckles. Yeah. Like
amazing.
Dang, I've never been called out at a comedy show. That's funny.
Two comedians did it in a row. And I was like, I'm going to start heckling you. Like if the third comedian calls me out, I'm going to start heckling them. But yeah.
Dang.
So what is with that, Devin? Because I know we have a couple minutes until our guests join. What's the latest on that? Is it a software developer that's fully autonomous, basically?
Yeah, and it got a lot of hype. And I think the piece that I'm most interested around it is the fact that it is really showing like end-to-end workflows coordinating across multiple agents that are doing different tasks and passing things back and forth. So there's definitely been a lot of like other solutions that do this, but Devin definitely was very splashy. There's also, of course, a lot of like counter arguments against it almost immediately of like, oh, it's not doing a great job at this. It's not doing a great job at that, which I think is totally fair because I think they're still kind of figuring that out. But it was a very big public like end-to-end automation of a workflow that a developer will go through. So I think it was very like important in that retrospect. And I think it shows what's really possible, especially as we start chaining together intentional agents into kind of like what humans are doing. And I do think it also shows a pattern that it's easier to focus on tech stuff, right? Like tech stuff's already in the computer. It's known well by the people who are working with AI. So I think a lot of tech roles might be the first ones to get automated, and like a lot of opportunities around productivity gain are also going to come kind of the tech side of the tech sector.
Yeah, super interesting. I think what's so fascinating about this agent architecture paradigm that we're seeing, where it does break down all of these different functions and roles, and even will QA and ask you, it'll kind of go back and forth to like, hey, I want you to go find or poke holes in this code that was just generated by this other part of the system. like, this is really fascinating. And it's something that our brains probably do that we're not super conscious or aware of. And I think that's part of the problem of identifying use cases and figuring out how to build these things, is that we just so subconsciously do a bunch of tasks that it's hard to think about what all the things, like what everything needs to do in order for it to perform well, and what information and context you need access to in order to do that really well. And I think that speaks to the level of complexity that our brains work at and how we're trying to mimic that into these agent architectures. So I do find it to be a very, very fascinating demonstration of that structure, which I was super happy to see, because I think that it's a really good step in the right direction.
Yeah, and I just want to take the opportunity to plug Marvin Minsky's book, Society of Mind, because it goes a lot into that agent concept, and it uses like how human brain cognition works to kind of talk about how a lot of those models can be architected in artificial intelligence. It's a very good, like, practical book, very interesting.
I just want to take a moment on the podcast to actually shout out Wilda, which is the Women Leaders in Data and AI community. It's an incredible community. It's based out of New York, but they're definitely global. They're targeting women leaders in that space in data and AI. They host an event in New York every year, which is fantastic. And the reason I'm shouting them out, one, I think they're awesome. And two, they have this like ventures and accelerator program that actually Align AI participated in. So Brendan and I spent a decent amount of time paired up with some incredible mentors who spent, I think, like 3 or 4 months with us, really helping us with some of the messaging for our product. And the reason it was so powerful for us, by the way, is that a lot of the people in the community were our target buyers and ICPs. So we got direct feedback from them on the way we were positioning our product and the current state of the market and current pain points. So it's just such an incredible experience. There were a lot of nice workshop opportunities in there too about legal and financial models that we really benefited from. And currently their applications are open. So if you are a women-led startup, kind of in the seed to series A is where they're targeting in this go around, and you're interested in participating in it, it is a really great opportunity to get in front of some incredible women and also just get some feedback about your company.
And I just want to add in, I think the really unique opportunity with Wilda for us was such a good combination of like domain experience and data and AI, and really understanding like the market, the players, who's like what they're working on. And then also a lot of expertise as well on startup best practices. And we get kind of like feedback on one side around the like the market and how data and AI work, and we get feedback on the other side of like how to do best practices around startups. But to have those in one conversation as you're making decisions is very, very valuable advice and feedback. So our mentors were great at really helping us kind of steer what we were doing in this space. So highly recommend anybody who's interested to check them out for sure.
Absolutely. And I think one thing to note, they're looking for people kind of deeply technical in this space as well. So as you're thinking about applying, if you are technical and you have a technical background and you have a woman either as a founder or on the executive team or managing team, I believe is the criteria, or you're a person of color, they definitely want to talk to you and they want you to apply. So like I said, very unique opportunity. Some absolutely top-notch CDOs of top Fortune 500 companies that participate as mentors. So it is an incredible opportunity. So we'll put in the show notes a link to the opportunity to apply, and definitely check it out.
Welcome, Alex Rogosian. Thanks so much for joining our 13th episode of AI or Die. We like to have practitioners on all the time. Alex, you're somebody who we've worked with, so you're a bit of a friend of the show. Just wanted to give it to you to introduce yourself. Who's Alex Rogosian? We can talk about, you know, the company you work at, as well as get into your background. How did you get into AI and how did you get into data science? And then we have some other topics we'd like to get into. But welcome, Alex. Thanks for joining.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here. So my name is Alex Rogosian. I lead a AI and ML development function within Bread Financial, which is a financial services institution. And prior to that, I think the common denominator in my career is that it's always been related to kind of applied analytics. So I started off in the nonprofit sector, focusing on assessment of technology impacts on the society and consumers and small businesses. Then I shifted over to startup world and worked in e-commerce sector and focusing how to use data to kind of drive success there. And then joined the corporate side, first in cybersecurity with data intelligence And that's kind of where I formally stepped into the data science world. And my role with Bread now is solely focused on specifically like the application of AI and ML to drive top line, bottom line gains for the company. So using the AI technology.
Yeah, that's great, Alex. And just for listeners who may not know who Bread Financial is, you know, what does Bread Financial really focus on? And what sorts of AI projects are you guys working on there?
Right. So let's see if I can remember the company mission. So I think it's the payment forward financial institution, right? So I think the history of Bread Financial, it started off as a spin-off JCPenney. And they're kind of like the brand behind the brand that you're probably using and don't know that you're using. So we have a lot of, you know, Fortune 1000 retailers. Credit cards are issued by us, right? So we're the underwriter and the bank that services those, the marketing company that provides the services, marketing service for those cards. And most recently, I think a couple of years ago, we have rebranded. It used to be called Alliance Data Systems, and we rebranded as Bread Financial. And now we're focusing more on digitalization, more like a holistic customer journey and kind of a brand beside the brand, right? So we have our own products that we offer, as well as continuing to support the partners that we have worked for several decades, I would say, in some cases.
Yeah, so and just being kind of on the financial side of things, I'm sure there's a lot of focus for AI applications in the fraud space and in the collection space and the call center space too, right?
But yeah, very much so, very much so. And we have worked with all of those to a different degree, depending on the application. We also have more of a embedded data science teams that work specifically with like credit or with fraud. But there are some use cases that are unique and kind of require novel solutions. And that's kind of where we jump in. So we're kind of, you can think of us as your internal consultants that develop, you know, unique, tailored, bespoke solutions that have high impact on
that's
company operations.
Certainly something I want to bring up, having worked with you directly, is just how you guys really make data science feel like a shared service. So like the business units can approach you guys and it really feels like you talk with us, the data science team, and we work with you to understand your problem operationally, where you're trying to go next, and really work with you to build these more custom solutions internally, which I think is brilliant. I think has helped drive a lot of culture change and excitement around AI at Bread.
Well, certainly. Thank you for those kind of words. And I don't think I can take credit for the accomplishment of all of that. But what I can say, like the journey has started before I joined the Bread and by my leadership. And, you know, what I want to credit them with is really the understanding. And maybe we'll get more into that, you know, the success of data science and like advanced analytics within the company is not simply just like hiring one or two like really talented data scientists and have them sit in the corner and develop like very highly sophisticated solutions, but it's a combination of collaboration between the business, right, the data science, its ability to leverage and influence technology behind it, and having the leadership support at the very top of the company, because some of these solutions really bring along a process change or behavioral change. And so that's, you know, that's change management. And it was not so really requires the engagement directly with the business to make that a success.
Yeah, I just want to jump in here and express how hard, absolutely hard that is. And every single organization, and you can tell that you guys have some muscle built around this, because every single company that is trying to design and build a data science function and capability that actually truly provides value to the organization, they do not understand typically that it drives so much process change and you have to have stakeholder buy-in. And that's like one of the hardest things. So I think just kudos to you and your leadership team for recognizing that and implementing that, because that is like the hardest part.
Well, and maybe do we have time to dig into this subject?
Yeah, let's go
a little bit here.
Yeah,
okay. Let's do it.
So, you know, I was just speaking with my leaders about that, you know, I think you have like this in the industry, you have two approaches, like, and like, maybe like how data scientists came to be, like, my my advanced degree is in applied economics. So I've always been looking for like apply. So I'm undergrad in mathematics and econ. So like I've always been interested in numbers, data analytics, right? But then not only just for the sake of it, but then applying it, right? So like why I'm giving this preamble is I think there's like two ways that people get into like the world of the data science. And one way is like purely technical, right? It's people that have come through the STEM degrees and they really like to, they're very curious and they like to build like really sophisticated stuff that's helpful, right? So that's one way. And then another way is that you see more people that are on the business side that are also curious and understand the impact that automation and AI can bring to the business operations, right? And then typically like those worldviews do not intersect, right? Like the folks that come from the technical standpoint say, you know, well, I really want to develop this like this cutting edge, really like important technically sound stuff, right? And the business people are like, well, we really want to influence the impact on the organization. And there is like this lack of desire to cross-pollinate. And typically that's what drives that, what you're describing, that one without the other and without really having the empathy for another, right? You end up, you know, you either end up having a technologist in the business, in the business world that, you know, that's disconnected from the technology. And then you're like stuck submitting ticket requests, right? All day long without being able to drive the solution, or you are kind of stuck, you know, having this, teams that really understand the business, but not able to drive implementation of a solution because of like lack of the, you know, access to the data science tech stack and such. So the combination of both, and this is where like I want to give kudos, at least like that's where I've seen a success, right? Like is where you, that's why you're going to have that federated state. You kind of got to have that federated state because you got to elevate data science to the level of that it's visible to executive management. And you have to have people that are both empathetic to technology and both empathetic to business. And maybe those are rare, I don't know. But like, that is kind of how my management is. Like they have the empathy for the both. And I'm seeing that this is really driving the success here.
Just as a leader in that space, how do you think about balancing kind of those projects that be maybe more technically interesting from a data science standpoint versus the projects that are maybe those simpler, quick wins for operations? Because I know you think constantly about like roadmap of data science projects and how to think about balancing those too. Any learnings that you've had? Because I know a lot of listeners here who are building up that data science capability struggle with that same balance.
Yeah, sure. You know, I think the first step, I think, is earning the trust of the organization. So I've kind of applied this every time I come to a new area and build several teams from the ground up. And first one is like earning the trust. So you, to me, again, I can't speak that this is like a prescription, but what have worked for me is like really getting a win or a couple of wins that really bring that business impact, right? So really proving the business that you're really useful. You mean what you say, right? And here, I don't want to be like delusional. Like that's a lot of work because in my experience, like maybe 1 out of 8 solutions is like a really slam dunk, right? Like, and they might like look the same. They might have like the same like assessment metrics and you're like, yeah, this is really going to go, but it doesn't really get traction, right? So you're really looking for that killer app, for something that's like, oh, that's what you do. Right. Like, and so I would say, like, if you focus first on that and then you earn the trust of the organization, then you kind of have a little bit more freedom to experiment. And my thought is that like 20-30% of my team's time, I give to development of new projects. And we have a very amazing, talented team in that stay up to speed on the latest development in technology. And things are really moving so fast that like some of this new development, like, even like 6 months down the road may become something that you cannot personalize. So what you are experimenting with now can become a solution you are personalized 6 or like 8 months down the road.
Yeah. So with that, are there a lot of like new, I guess, what's stuck out to you even in the past 6 months around gosh, that has really sped up in terms of its impact on operations. Like we talk a lot about just in the past 6 months, how even organizations at a high level have taken much more of an operational focus around what use cases they prioritize and where they really focus their data science efforts. On the other side of the research side, like are you seeing kind of new emerging technologies that are particularly exciting or trends you're seeing in 2024 that you're keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the maturity of the organization where you're at, right? So if you're talking about like, you know, the leaders in this space, like the, you know, the top four in tech and everything, right? It's probably about this like iterative innovation where they're like, they have solved most of their technology problems and have leveraged, right, machine learning and data science to like achieve substantial gains, right? So for them, like, yeah, it's like, yeah, let's look into this cutting edge technology and let's push some boundaries here and there, right? On the other hand, so that's like one extreme. On the other extreme, you have somebody who's trying it for the first time. And I think there was a lady on your podcast that was discussing that, like, how do you really get going? And that type of organization has a different challenge. Like for them, just getting a few quick wins and a few like low hanging fruit might drive substantial impact and substantial value, right? And let's say where we are at, like somewhere in the middle. So mid-sized organizations, we have again, like a couple of mature data science teams that support our operations. And then we have this team that's kind of like looking for more new and innovative approaches and like any other areas that haven't been touched, haven't been serviced. So for us, what I'm seeing that's like becoming really, like really gaining attention is the RAG architecture and vector database and things like that. So there's been a big splash with generative AI. You know, I think everybody from, you know, your frontline employees to your board members have seen and read articles on that, right? And there's been a lot of expectation, maybe some fear and excitement about what AI can do. And I think we're kind of entering now that little bit of a trove of the disillusionment that like, okay, this is might not be as easy as we thought, right? Like, well, no, the robot is not going to cook my eggs tomorrow for me, right? Like that, we're still far away from that. And, you know, but where we see now is like, there's still definitely use cases where there is big opportunities there, such as, you know, chatbots or knowledge management, right? So the document querying, but, you know, you're dealing with the probabilistic responses here, right? So how do you ensure accuracy? So the RAG architecture allows the kind of like the fact checking, right? The assurance that this is based on the response that based on reality and based on and ability to tailor it to your unique data set or your unique solution, right?
For sure. So I know we have just a few minutes left, Alex, as you think about, this is a great question we like to ask folks, which is resources, because a lot of our audience is always trying to learn and get better at understanding trends in AI today and really helpful resources just from becoming a better data scientist or a leader of technical teams and data scientists too. Are there key sources of information that you come back to leveraging, whether it's podcasts or books or articles or open source information that you found helpful as a leader in this space that you'd recommend others to go and check out?
Well, I would say podcasts such as yours, right? But I, you know, staying curious, again, it really depends where you are on the business versus technical spectrum, right? So I know that like my data scientists, they will, you know, jump like really deep into like Medium articles, Kaggle, and stay up to date on like the most recent technology releases, right? And that they gotta have to keep up to speed. Like technology is moving so fast, so I would say start there. You know, from my standpoint, and this is just from Alex, you know, vantage point, being on the intersection of like leading team, business, and data science. I like the technology updates. Like Tech Meme is one of the sources that I always go to. So it's got a good intersection of like the business splash news and then also like technology side. And then just keeping up with, you know, I can go into more deepening topics. So if there's something that sounds interesting, then just following that and kind of finding the articles.
Nice. That's helpful. And I know we are coming up on time. So again, Alex, I just want to thank you again. I think this was a super insightful kind of time together. If folks want to reach out, can they find you on LinkedIn somewhere? Obviously, we'll include a link, but any other ways that folks can reach out and get a hold of you in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I have a presence on LinkedIn and a few things that I have published. So yeah, absolutely. I'll share my link with you guys.
You're humble. I'm pretty sure you have a few thousand followers, so you're pretty humble. Like, yeah, you have a presence on LinkedIn for sure. We'll link that. Any other things that are top of mind, Alex, exciting you about AI in 2024 before we go ahead and wrap?
Well, you know, I think it's like a blessing and a curse of like where we are with AI, because like, you know, where I started doing data science before it was cool, right? And so it's really cool to see that this is becoming mainstream. There is definitely, you know, prices to pay for that, because there's a lot of hype. And, you know, if I can say how many inquiries I get from like the startups daily saying, hey, we have an AI solution, right? And such and such and such. So it's kind of like becoming that there's so much of overabundance of information that it's like becoming oversaturated and you don't really know what to trust. But I think it's kind of a natural progression that you see with every market. So it's really exciting to me that this is becoming a reality. I think we're just at the beginning of this journey, right? Like, I'm sure there's like a really cool announcements coming from OpenAI about like artificial intelligence and such. So I think there's, you know, the biggest things are still to come. So it's exciting part to be involved with this.
Agree. Well, thank you for your time today, sir. I appreciate you joining. And for folks listening at home, thanks for listening to AI or Die podcast episode 13.